Minnesota Progressive repartee for your Thursday afternoon. An absolute gorgeous day, one of the last few days we're going to get with that temperature soaring above 60 degrees. Brett, along with Eric, and later Kate will join us on the program as well. She'll be running the board a little bit. Hopefully at some point we'll be able to hear her on the microphone, but for now still trying to get those little tech parts down.
Being stuck trained with me on the mic.
Stuck with Eric on the microphone. Oh, have to ask for Eric's opinion, I guess, on a few issues. No, actually, I'm glad to have you with me because I want to get your opinion on a few things we're going to talk about today in the first segment. But before we get into politics, Matt got me fired up last hour when he was talking about this whole idea of people doing the old at intersections. No, you go. No, I'll go. No, you go. No, I'll go. No, I'll go now. No, you go. Now I'll go. Road pet peeves. I got one myself.
Yeah, I have one in mind.
Yeah, I'll go with mine first. Well, I have a couple, actually. I'm just kind of turned into the, you know what grinds my gears, back from that old Family Guy skit. But anyways, here's what grinds my gears. Zipper merging. Do you know what zipper merging is, Eric?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. We are just horrible at this. Originally, I thought this was just isolated to Minnesota, but I think it's more of a Midwest thing because I've run into this in both Iowa and Wisconsin on some of their roads where zipper merging is the way you're supposed to actually merge when you see those signs that show left lane closed 3 miles ahead. When you see that sign, left lane closed 3 miles ahead, it does not mean merge immediately. It means merge when the lane actually is closing, because you can actually use two lanes of traffic for those 3 miles rather than just one. And this has happened to me on a few occasions when I've been out driving on the road on the interstates where there was one egregious example where I was trying to do this. I was in the left lane, which was going to be closed a few miles ahead, and all of a sudden, big black truck in front of me pulls in front and just purposely starts driving like 20 miles an hour, being Mr. Enforcer guy.
This is literally the pet peeve I was thinking of.
You have the exact same one, the zipper merge?
Exactly, and not just the zipper merge and people not understanding, like, the road continues for 3 miles because you're supposed to use the road for
exactly,
the next 3 miles.
Yes.
Specifically, someone thinks that they're the enforcer and they have this wrong idea in their head that everyone needs to merge immediately or else you're being bad. You're breaking the rules and I have to stop this.
Yeah, and that's exactly what that guy was doing. And it's very dangerous because he kept pumping his brakes. And I eventually tried going around him. Probably not the safest maneuver on my part, but he actually got a little road rage and tried to almost run me off the road. Yeah, people get very defensive about this. It's like, well, I've been waiting in this lane for 2 hours, or not 2 hours, for 2 miles, and I can't let anyone pass me. And yeah, just that's, the enforcer guy is just
that's
the thing
worst. That drives me the craziest, is not just that they're like taking the rules into their own hand. They're not even correct about this.
Yeah, yeah.
That they'd have such righteous anger about something they're completely wrong about.
Occasionally, some of the local publications, the Star Tribune among them, will write about these, and it's always fun reading the comments sections because there are still a significant portion of people that don't believe in the zipper merge. For whatever reason, they still think it's more efficient to actually merge as soon as you see that sign that says road or lane closed 3 miles ahead. I wonder if we could maybe change some minds if we just took this to like an absolute absurd angle of saying something like left lane closed 150 miles ahead. If people would still in that scenario still automatically merge if they saw a sign that said left lane closed, 300 miles ahead.
As long as there's a blinking sign, yeah, I think they probably would.
Yeah, just absolute panic whenever there's a blinking sign on the road. So there you go. The zipper merge is one of my pet peeves. The other one actually has to do with me and biking. Well, now I got thinking about another one. Here's the first one I have. So state trails. If you can think of some of them, like the Dakota Rail Trail up in the Minnetonka-Wayzata area, the Loose Line Trail, the Minnesota River Bluffs Trail, that's the one that's actually going to be running along the light rail line. So when you see a bike approaching these intersections and they have signs specifically put up on these trails, it's actually the bikes who are supposed to wait. The cars are supposed to keep driving through these crosswalks on state trails, but all the time, cars end up stopping at these. And I can see where the confusion is because on normal crosswalks, yeah, the cars probably are supposed to stop. But on state trails, that's not actually the state law. And the problem I have is like on four-lane roads, one lane of traffic will stop. which is not exactly safe for me to cross because there's still three other lanes of traffic. So I'll see the guy constantly waving, going, move, 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 when that's not actually the law. So a little heads up, it's kind of tough to tell, but if you're ever in a car and you are crossing a state trail, you actually have the right of way, not the pedestrians, not the bikers, not the walkers. It's actually the cars that get to keep moving. So that one's always bugged me for a number of years when I saw that. But in that case, I can at least see why people are confused about that.
It's kind of like someone holding the door open for you, like,
yeah,
30 feet ahead. And it's like, well, do you want me to run to the door
now? Yeah, exactly. The other one I'll just briefly mention is when bikers ride on the street, when there's a bike trail right next to the road. That I've never gotten, because you're just defeating the purpose of having a bike trail if you elect to ride on the road when there's a perfectly good trail right next to the road. I don't get that at all.
That's funny. Yeah, around my house, there's a bunch of walking trails all over.
Mm-hmm.
People are always running and riding their bikes on the road.
I don't get the logic behind that, because if you're a walker or if you're a biker and you get hit by a car, guess who's going to win that crash? Not you. The car is going to win that battle. Every single time. All right, so there you go. There's a little few things that kind of annoy me about the roads now that Matt got me going when he was talking about the infamous intersections here in Minnesota. We were also talking during the break. Kate, not a fan of drivers in roundabouts. Not the roundabouts themselves, but actually the drivers in the roundabouts. And I'm kind of with her on that. People are still kind of clueless on how to actually approach roundabouts. They work great when everyone knows how to use them. Just unfortunately, we don't have the best driver education when it comes to roundabouts.
I would say more often than not, when I get in a roundabout situation, someone's at a complete stop at them.
Yeah.
It just basically defeats the purpose.
Yeah. So maybe in a few years, once we get some more new drivers on the road, people will start picking things up. But yeah, I'm not sure about that, though. There's still a lot of people who are very set in their ways when it comes to the ways that they drive. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. All right, I think we should get back into politics since, well, that is the point of our show here on AM 950 with the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Coming up later, I'm going to actually bring up a couple of good news stories, because scanning through the news today through the different sources that I look like, or that I look at, I've actually found a number of stories that are pretty positive in terms of what's happening in state government and even at the federal level. So we'll talk about those in the second half of the show, because among all the really bad stuff we see happening in the world of politics, there actually is some good news. So we'll get to that during the second half of the show. But let's get to a few headlines for today's show. The first one I got to ask, is Mitt Romney the new Jeff Flake? Because apparently today he gave a very fiery speech on the Senate floor criticizing the Trump administration for what they've done in Syria, which is great that he's giving a fiery speech, but kind of like Jeff Flake and other Republicans we've seen, when push comes to shove, probably not going to end up doing anything. So I think Mitt Romney might be our new Jeff Flake in the Senate. Also, some Senate news, and also on the presidential campaign, how about our own Amy Klobuchar? Well, apparently from her debate performance, she had her best fundraising day ever, as the day after the campaign, she raised $1.1 million in contributions in the 24-hour period, her best fundraising day. And that kind of leads me to this question. If you just come out very aggressively during a debate, does that mean you've automatically done well? Not necessarily criticizing Amy Klobuchar's debate performance per se, but I just feel like that's kind of the measure we sometimes get in these very large debate forums, where whoever comes out the most aggressively, speaks the most, or even talks the loudest usually is perceived as doing the best, because we've seen that even with Kamala Harris back in the first debate, where she kind of got a bump in the polls and the bump in fundraising numbers because she came out very aggressively. And we've seen that among other candidates as well. I feel like we almost kind of look at these debates as almost a sporting event, where we don't necessarily look at the content of what someone is saying on the debate stage. We just look at, well, are they coming off aggressively? Either way, though, it is good news for Amy, as she has reached $1.1 million in a 24-hour period just after that debate. But this one I find funny, speaking of candidate fundraising. So Democratic presidential candidates spent $335 million in the first 9 months of the year. But here's the funny part. Apparently, just short of $100 million of that $335 million went towards paying to get more fundraising which is hilarious. Hunter and I talked about this on a past show where we brought up how Klobuchar and Cory Booker were basically paying for ads on Facebook to get individual donors to their campaign. And this shows exactly what's happening, because here's the really insane stat, Eric. Among the six candidates who recently dropped out of the Democratic race, they combined to spend $50 million building lists of potential donors and buying digital advertising. What an absolute waste of money, spending $50 million just to get more individual donors.
Absolutely. It seems like that's kind of the goal, is just to get individual donors.
Yeah.
Because you hear, about Cory Booker spending something like $50 to get $1 from individual donors.
Yeah, you're spending money to actually make less money. So I think we do need – we're moving in the right direction, I think, at least in terms of who should qualify for the Democratic debates, because I do like the idea of not having a JV table, kind of like what the Republicans had in 2016. But I think we've definitely seen this rule slash idea exploited with the number of individual donors that you need, because it was largely put in there to try to help candidates – actually have a grassroots feel, like a Bernie Sanders or among others, not to actually have people go out and just pay to get more donors. Looking at you, Tom Steyer, buying his way onto the debate stage. So,
well, me and Hunter actually talked about this, and there should be lists of people willing to donate $10 if you give me $20. Give me $20, I'll give you $10 back.
Oh, that's an interesting idea right there. So would that actually be legal, though?
I have no idea.
Yeah, that would strike me as potentially having some legal issues similar to Andrew Yang.
I'm not promising I'll vote for you.
Yeah,
just give you $10 back.
Just give you it seems a little gray area in terms of legality, but at least a better system than what we have now, because the idea of having a certain number of individual donors needed to qualify for a debate is a good idea on its surface, just we've unfortunately seen that exploited during this campaign cycle. So who knows, maybe in 2024, 2028, when we have another open seat for the Democrats seeking the presidential nomination, we might have a better system. But Eric, you might be onto something there if we can just get around the legality of that. Let's go to the phone lines and talk to Lynette in Chaska as she wants to go back to the driving topic. Hey there, Lynette.
Yeah, hi, Brett. Hi, Eric. Yeah, my job is I do teach driving, and I used to teach it in the 90s, too, and I think people have gotten really more aggressive, and people honk at the student drivers. It's really mean, and a lot of times they honk at us because they think we should be doing something different, which always kind of amazes me a little bit. I personally think that everybody needs a refresher course, probably 5 years after high school, and I put myself in that category, too, because I had forgotten a lot of things over the years, and then when I worked in at a driving school in my 30s, it was like, wow, okay, now I finally know what I was supposed to know. Because in high school, you can forget a lot of things. So people are driving around with this knowledge from, 40 years ago or longer, and it isn't up to date. And I think a lot of people don't know what the rules are, but their ego, as they're driving, they think they know, and it gets kind of crazy sometimes on the road.
I think a behind-the-wheel test would be tough to convince people to do like every 5 or 10 years, but a written test, I don't think that would be a bad idea. How about you?
I do feel that way because, when I have a student, if they're a high school student, if they're the oldest in the family, they are usually the refresher course for their parents, because they'll be driving with their mom or dad, and their mom or dad will go, "What? Are you sure this is the right thing to do?" So, yeah, it really, there's a lot of people that really don't know what to do, or they hold up traffic because they're not sure what to do. Or if you're from a small town, you forget because you don't have a lot of cars around. And then they come to a town. When I used to live in St. Cloud, it was like that a lot of the people in St. Cloud didn't know what to do because they'd come shopping in St. Cloud and they lived in a little town. So people just forget is what happens.
All right. Thanks so much for the call there, Lynette. Even I kind of ran into that when I was working small town radio and moved back to Minneapolis. It actually took a little bit of adjusting to that quicker pace that the roads move at when you live in a metropolitan area. But I like the idea of having a recurring written test every 5 to 10 years.
Especially maybe on something like roundabouts everyone should
yeah,
be quizzing
yeah.
on. Because it feels like no one was taught roundabouts in their driver's ed classes. At least I wasn't.
Yeah, and I think that should be for all ages, because we've often hear people say, well, seniors over the age of 70 should have to get behind the wheel and take a written test every 5 years or so. I think that should actually apply to people of all ages, because you're right. That would probably make roundabouts a lot safer, because that's a new thing that people over the age of probably 30 never learned about when they were taking driving school.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to one more phone call before we head to our first break. We got Philip in Mendota Heights. Hi there, Philip.
Hi, my pet peeve are people who have driving lights but think they have automatic headlights.
Oh, yes.
So they start their car, they see the driving lights come on, and then they drive the car in the fog, the heavy rain, and the snow, and at night with no taillights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that certainly is very dangerous and when you get some hazardous conditions outside, yes.
I would like to see people that are in places say, you know, when you start your car and back out of the garage, put it in park, walk around it. Do you have taillights lit? Mm-hmm. If not, you don't have your lights on.
Especially for people who drive.
Explain what driving lights are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point there, Philip. I think as time goes on, though, that problem is largely going to be solved by the car manufacturers themselves, because at least the cars I've had for the past few years have that setting where the lights automatically adjust to whatever the lighting is outside, because I've, at least on my last two cars, I have not manually had to turn my lights on or off. It's just on an automatic setting. So I think
there's an auto setting. That's different than when just the driving lights.
Yeah, exactly. And for people who drive older cars, yeah, that absolutely should be the thing, because it is easy sometimes if you're in a rush to forget to turn your lights on, or, as you're kind of, I think, alluding to, if you're just flat-out lazy and assume they're on, even though they're not actually.
Yes, and it's very dangerous when you can't see the back of a car.
Yeah.
And it's foggy, snowy, or heavy rain because you don't see the headlights in front of it either.
Mm-hmm. Especially in hazardous conditions during the day, because sometimes people think, well, it's daytime. Even though it's raining, people can still see me, and that's not necessarily the case. Hey there, Philip, thanks so much for the call. Really appreciate your thoughts on that. So, yeah, if you drive one of those cars that don't have automatic lights, make sure you always err on the sides of turning those on. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's hit up one more story before we head to our first commercial break, and that is President Trump's reelection campaign says it's hiring a large number of staff members to open field offices around Minnesota, which is very unlike what they did in 2016. To jog your memory, do you remember back in 2016? Trump basically only had one full-time field staff member in Minnesota. In fact, that was kind of a running joke that there was basically just one guy who represented the Trump campaign in Minnesota. And in fact, it turns out he actually split time between Minnesota and also Colorado, so certainly a very busy guy. But the Trump campaign has really ramped up their efforts in Minnesota to hire a number of full-time staffers to represent his campaign. And even though I don't like the Trump administration at all, I think it's a great strategy on his part and something that Democrats kind of got away from after about 2010 or so. This idea that even if you're not probably going to win a state, you should always try to compete in that state no matter what, because at the very least, you force the opposition to spend resources in that state. And it kind of goes back to, do you remember back in the mid and late 2000s, Howard Dean and the 50-state strategy? It paid off great for Democrats in 2006 and 2008, but as we approached the 2010s and got into that decade, we sort of got away from that strategy, and it really hurt us in 2016 when it was Hillary Clinton running a very targeted campaign on certain states and not really focusing on areas like Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, or even necessarily trying to expand the map in kind of reddish-purple states. So even though I'm certainly not a fan of President Trump, at least from a purely political strategy, this is actually a good move by him to open a number of field offices around Minnesota. 952-946-6205. We'll take your calls on the other side of the break and continue with the news here on the Repartee.
Brending Electrolysis on Grand Avenue in St. Paul has been a leader in permanent hair removal for people of all skin types and backgrounds for over 30 years, celebrating diversity and priding themselves on finding the right treatment plan for each client's individual needs, regardless of race or gender. Services include electrolysis, body waxing, facials, microneedling, and permanent makeup. Book your 60-minute complimentary consultation, including a 15-minute treatment today, for beautiful, lasting results. Visit BrendingElectrolysis.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak.
And I'm Adam Ostrowski.
We are here at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces to talk about outdoor fires. Sitting around a fire is the oldest, most basic form of human activity.
What's new is in the way fire is burned. We can show you how to burn cleaner with a lot less smoke.
The radiant heat and light from an open fire is unmatched. It kindles our spirits and connects us to the outdoors. And now it's easier to experience and enjoy.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces sells and installs wood and gas burning fire pits and fireplaces. Let us help you experience an outdoor fire without all the smoke.
Come see the many ways you can enjoy a fire outdoors.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces has over 35 working wood and gas units on display at the corner of East Franklin and Riverside Avenue in Minneapolis. More information at woodlandstoves.com. Find the fire that works for you. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
Hello, fellow AM950 listeners. This is Jason from Nightingale at 26 in Lindale. Come experience our delicious signature dishes and exciting rotation of inventive seasonal fare for my wife and chef, Carrie, and her team. Nightingale is the perfect place to gather for any occasion with our extensive wine, beer, and cocktail selection, along with our dedication to great service. We offer a full menu every day from 4 to 1 a.m., two award-winning daily happy hours, and weekend brunch at 10. More at nightingalempls.com.
Legal issues, never fun, and they're certainly stressful. While it's tempting just to Google your legal situation, there is a better way. The Hennepin County Bar Association. Their referral counselors can answer many of your questions, like, do you even need an attorney? And if you do, what type? They can connect you to a network of over 200 thoroughly vetted, qualified attorneys practicing in over 50 areas of law. Call 612-752-6666 or search for Hennepin County Bar Association. The right call for the right lawyer.
Better Futures Minnesota impacts the community by addressing root causes of poverty, homelessness, dependency on public assistance, and high rates of untreated trauma that often lead to incarceration. The lives of men served have been marked by chaos, violence, and loss, which contribute to feelings of devaluation, rage, and lost human potential. Healings from this trauma is essential before participants can succeed as workers, fathers, and responsible community members. Learn how you can support our efforts at BetterFuturesMinnesota.com.
Welcome back to the 4 o'clock repartee. It's Brett, Eric, and Kate on your Thursday afternoon. Coming up, we're going to be talking about some good news that's been happening both locally and nationally, because among all the negativity we sometimes see in political news, there actually is some good news that's going on, including in Minneapolis, because I don't know if you knew this, but they are in the midst of negotiating a new 3-year contract between the city of Minneapolis and the Police Federation. Now, naturally, you would think on the front side, well, that can't be good if we got Bob Kroll negotiating on behalf of the Minneapolis police officers, being that, well, not the greatest guy in the world. But there is this group in Minneapolis called Minneapolis for a Better Police Contract that sees the contract as a chance to make fundamental changes to how the department operates, and they have some really good proposals that I think even some of the police officers should come out in favor of. So we'll talk more about this later on in the show, but let's continue with the phone calls and talk to Mike in North Minneapolis. Hi there, Mike. What's on your mind today?
Hi, I just wanted to throw in my 2 cents worth on those traffic circles, because there's an intersection in between Minneapolis and Robbinsdale where you've got the streets coming together, Lowry Avenue, Oakdale Avenue, where the hospital, North Memorial Hospital, sits, Theaterworth Parkway, West Broadway, and Lakeland Avenue, which mm-hmm. was old Highway 52, all coming together at the same spot.
Can I interrupt
right now? There's an
I was going to say, is County Road 81 in there too?
Yeah, County Road 81 is now the name of that, what used to be U.S. Highway 52
right, okay.
back then.
Yeah, I know exactly where you're talking, yeah.
And that whole intersection up previous to 1966 was a traffic circle. And this goes all the way back to the 20s or something. This goes way back into the past. They ripped it out in 1966 and put in overpass bridges for Broadway and Lakeland Avenue, what is now County Road 81. And the reason they did it was because that was the most dangerous intersection in the state. There were all kinds of crashes happening around that traffic circle. And, in fact, there was a program nationwide to get rid of all of those traffic circles because they were dangerous. Now, you look at the places where the traffic circles are starting to show up again, like Minnesota, and it's the result of us having a Republican legislature there for a while, because all the other states that are doing it are have Republican governors and Republican legislatures, and suddenly these traffic circles are showing up. They're the same as they used to be. The only thing that's different is the signage, and they think that that's going to be safer, but what attracts the Republicans to those traffic circles for traffic management is how cheaply they can be built compared to a bridge, overpass, and underpass situation. So we're sacrificing safety, unfortunately, for the public.
I have never heard of the connection of roundabouts being a Republican thing, but I got to ask you this about your specific intersection that you were kind of talking about in Minneapolis and Robbinsdale. Do you think part of that problem when that was so dangerous was that, and maybe this was different back then, so correct me, didn't you have several roads actually meeting in one area? Wouldn't that be kind of a reason why that it was actually very dangerous? Because at most roundabouts you see now, it's just an intersection of two roads. And isn't that area you're talking about in Minneapolis and Robbinsdale kind of on that border area? Weren't there like three or four roads that were meeting there, and maybe that made it a little bit dangerous with the roundabout?
Well, that just serves to make my point, because what it really means is that when you have these roundabouts in urban areas and there's more traffic, and there's the potential for more traffic to come in, they'll be more dangerous. Now, yes, this one was particularly dangerous because of all the roads coming in there, but they obeyed the same laws that the traffic circles do now, where as soon as you enter the circle, you're supposed to go to the right until you get to the place that you want to pop off on. And so it's the same set of rules, and nothing has really changed.
All right, Mike, thanks so much for the call. We might have to bring on some sort of MnDOT engineer to talk about this, because I still do like the general idea of roundabouts. But, Mike, you might have a point there. If you have a super busy intersection, then, yeah, maybe you should actually have a traffic light, or the more expensive but also safer option, actually using overpasses. But I love the connection of roundabouts being a Republican thing. I've not heard that argument made before, so it might make some sense, though, if they do end up being a little bit cheaper than some of the other options, including overpasses and traffic lights. Not sure, though, if politics usually makes it into that local of a level, but who knows? Maybe they do. At least in some cities, that actually is the case, where you do have Republicans and Democrats that are specifically endorsed by parties, but not normally in the suburbs and small towns. Usually that's just kind of reserved for the bigger areas. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. All right, coming up next, I want to continue talking about some good news we've seen both in Minnesota and at the national level, including this idea of this group in Minnesota called Minneapolis for a Better Police Contract, because I want to talk more about this, because there are some good proposals that this group is talking about. We'll get to that up next, but first, it's time for the news from the Public News Service.
This is a Public News Service Daily Newscast update. I'm Mike Clifford. Elijah Cummings has died. The Washington Post reporting the Democratic congressman from Maryland, who gained national attention for his principled stands on politically charged issues in the House, his calming effect on the anti-police riots in Baltimore, and his forceful opposition to the presidency of Donald Trump, died early this morning. He was 68. President Trump tried Wednesday to distance himself from the escalating chaos in northern Syria, that following the decision to withdraw U.S. troops from the region. Also for the Washington Post, they quote Trump as saying that Turkey and the Kurds are fighting over land that has nothing to do with us. And Minnesota voters will head to the polls on Tuesday, November the 5th. They'll be there to decide a host of municipal races and referendums. Even though the presidential election is still a year away, state officials say that ballot security is still a high priority this fall. Mike Moen reports.
Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon says anyone who wants to disrupt the democratic process could use local races to spread false information. He says hackers and other groups won't be taking this November off.
The intelligence authorities tell us, meaning all the secretaries of state and elections administrators, to be on the lookout for that. And as you'd suspect with any election, the stakes become higher and the likelihood of falsehoods become higher.
Simon adds it isn't only foreign adversaries posting false information in an effort to sway elections. He says there are plenty of fringe groups in the U.S. who post fake ads and articles. Officials say voters can detect phony political information by looking for photos that have been altered or online links that mischaracterize what a news story actually says.
Looking ahead, Simon says the state will use some funding provided by Congress to bolster election infrastructure ahead of the March primary. This is PNS.
The squeeze on farmers has tightened in recent years, with net farm incomes down by half since 2013. Al Parrish is a retired dairy farmer and member of the Land Stewardship Project. He thinks the new NAFTA deal, known as the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, won't do farmers any favors. Parrish says it could undercut calls for a dairy supply management system similar to Canada's that helps family farmers and is weakened in the deal. He adds the farm crisis is hurting rural towns.
Their retail businesses are all suffering because of the farm economy. And to think that we're going to dump some milk on the Canadians and that's going to fix it, that's somebody's nightmare, not even a dream.
Dairy farmers north of the border have a management policy that keeps the supply of milk in balance with demand in the country, which helps small farms and relies on restricting milk importation. In the U.S., dairy farmers are hurting. According to the USDA, nearly 3,000 went under in 2018. The USMCA is awaiting approval from Congress. For Minnesota News Connection, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and you'll find us online at publicnewsservice.org.
Imagine cyber criminals waiting outside your network, probing for weaknesses. What if you're next? Well, what if you had a team of experts to navigate you through these what-if waters? Hi, Mark Sommerfeld from Rymark with a unique offer, a free network security assessment. We'll uncover the hidden threats to your business and provide you with a map to peace of mind. Call 651-328-8900 or go to RymarkIT.com to schedule your free security assessment and stop drowning in what-ifs.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 Radio on Monday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. I'm an idealist working to change the world. My show, Ellie 2.0 Radio, highlights other past and present idealists and the incredible things humans can do when we work for the greater good. You remember that idea about the greater good, right? I've got a vision of a better world where everyone has a place at the table. Listen every Monday from 7 to 8 a.m. and be inspired on AM 950.
Join author Benjamin Percy on October 22nd at Next Chapter Booksellers as he presents his latest collection of horror stories, Suicide Woods. A potent brew of horror, crime, and weird happenings, Suicide Woods is Benjamin Percy's first story collection since his acclaimed Refresh, Refresh. In story after story, Percy delivers haunting and chilling narratives that will have readers hanging on every word. That's Benjamin Percy at Next Chapter Booksellers in St. Paul on Tuesday, October 22nd at 7 p.m. More at nextchapterbooksellers.com.
I'm attorney Rachel Schroman of Schroman Law, and I've got you covered. I provide trusted legal advice in wills and trusts, supplemental and special needs trust, powers of attorney, health care directives, probate, financing long-term care, medical assistance planning, and prenuptial and postnuptial agreements. These are areas of law that are intensely personal in nature, and I don't take the responsibility of providing counsel around such issues lightly. Learn more at schromanlaw.com. That's schromenlaw.com.
With your AM 950 weather, this is Eric Nelson. Tonight, increasing clouds with a low of 44. Friday, partly sunny with a high of 66, and a chance of rain at night with a low around 48. Saturday will be sunny with a high of 62 and a low around 45. Sunday, a chance of rain and temperatures in the 50s.
Don't miss the Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday only at the Healthy Sports Center, featuring up to 150 home improvement companies, giveaways, and more. It's the Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday at the Healthy Sports Center. See it all at expoguys.com. That's expoguys.com.
We're back on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. By the way, happy birthday to Hunter Haas. Had someone tell me that it's Hunter's birthday today, so do want to wish him a very happy birthday. And hopefully in the coming days and weeks, you'll hear him a little bit back here on AM 950. But happy birthday to Hunter Haas.
It's like Trump said, where's Hunter?
Exactly.
Where's Hunter?
When I was talking to him the other day, he's actually trying to get some of his Republican friends to buy that shirt for him. Where's Hunter? People have, double meaning here at AM 950 and both here and also at the Trump administration as well. So happy birthday to Hunter Haas, as we'll also be celebrating that here tomorrow at the station, having a little birthday cake that the owner, Chad, will be bringing us. Let's go back to the phone lines and talk to Randy in St. Cloud. Hey there, Randy. You don't want to talk about roundabouts, do you?
Well, I did. I was in England for a couple of different stints, and boy, they seem to have that worked out. It seems to work pretty smoothly, but, you know, what do I know? And part of the deal is we have a lot of cautionary drivers.
Yep.
And going cautionary into a roundabout screws up the whole
thing. That's a horrible recipe. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, but anyway. No, what I want to talk about is, you know, so Amy Klobuchar comes on and screams and yells, "You people can't have good things. We can't afford nice things." And then she gets an increase in her funding?
Yeah, what? Biggest fundraising day she's had during her entire campaign.
And it was the 27 people who are gazillionaires who live in Minnesota who went, "That's it, Amy. That's right. Don't let those people have anything good that they want or need. That's it. You got it." So that's my take on how that played out. Because it's like, Amy, are you kidding? We can't have nice things. We don't deserve what? We don't deserve it. We can't afford it. We can afford all kind. I just read a thing in the Star Tribune. I'm off topic a bit, but not really, about how they're cutting funding to food programs and free food to the elderly and the indigent, and they showed a place up in Plymouth, the Bassett Creek Community Center. They're cutting funding, and those people are not going to get as much free food sent to them. They're all poor. They're all elderly. They don't have a lot of options. And I was thinking, okay, so we don't have money for that. What do we have money? Oh, I know. We do have money. We could bomb them.
Yeah.
Because we have money for that.
Mm-hmm. Plenty of money,
And then after that, we wouldn't have to worry about them because they're not hungry anymore. They're dead.
Oof, yeah.
How about that would work? Wouldn't it?
Yeah, certainly a nihilist way to look at it, but there's probably some people who unfortunately wouldn't disagree with you there, yeah, because they're not poor if they're not around anymore. And
yeah.
Kind of a dark note there to end the phone call, Randy.
Sorry.
No, that's
man.
All right. Appreciate it. Hey, by the way, good seeing you at our debate watching party as well. It's been kind of fun over the past few months and years trying to get some names to faces among some of our callers. Randy, one of them. Also have met Gary in Minneapolis. I've met Lisa, who else? Mark and Fridley. So still trying to get a face to everyone's name. And hopefully by the time the next Blue State Ball rolls around, I'll have even more of you that I'll actually know in person. One guy I have not met in person, though, Randy in Coon Rapids. I still want to meet Randy in Coon Rapids in person because now he kind of seems like a myth to me. The question is, does Randy in Coon Rapids actually exist? I need to meet him in person at some point to see if he actually does, or maybe if he's a robocaller or something that's using some sort of Trump AI system to give us calls here at the station. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So despite all the negativity, there actually is some good news out in the political world. So let's continue what we were talking about here in Minneapolis, because as I said, the Minneapolis Police Union is in the midst of negotiating a new 3-year contract, which actually currently expires in December. They're working on a new 3-year contract, but there's this community group called Minneapolis for a Better Police Contract, and they're using this as kind of a push to make some fundamental changes to the Minneapolis police force. But I like a few of these proposals that they've actually drawn up. And to be honest, if I'm a police officer, I would actually like some of these proposals too. One top priority that they're trying to get through would prohibit officers working more than 50 hours in 1 week, because this I did not know. Under the current deal, there's no cap on how many hours of overtime a police officer can work, which is really a bad sign, because I don't know about you, but I don't want a police officer pulling me over who's worked 70 or 80 hours in that week, because just naturally the way humans function, after you've worked 60, 70, 80 hours, you're not exactly the sharpest. And sorry to say, you're probably not also in the best of moods either. So that's a great proposal right there, trying to put a cap on how many hours of overtime cops can work. And even if I'm a police officer, I would probably be in favor of that too, because while the overtime pay is probably nice, it would certainly get old after a while. Another proposal I like is that they're calling on Minneapolis cops to be subject to mental health screenings every 3 years, and for testing of new hires who had previously worked at another law enforcement agency. And I think that is very, very key, because I've heard this in the news over the past few years that sometimes when you get an officer who has been fired from misconduct in one city, they just end up going and becoming a cop in another city. So I like the idea that we're going to continue, or at least from this proposal, they would continue mental health screenings every 3 years, including people who have come from another law enforcement agency. All right, let's take a look at some other good news from today. And this one I really like coming out of California, because this could affect us here in Minnesota in a few years. Here's why. So last Friday, California Governor Gavin Newsom signed into law a requirement that all cannabis stores enter into so-called labor peace agreements as soon as they have 20 or more employees. California, of course, is now one of two states, New York being the other, that requires licensed weed shops to make a deal with a formal labor union in which managers promise not to stop workers from joining a union, and in exchange, organizers won't encourage labor strikes against the company. So this is a good thing that's happening in California and New York, trying to get ahead of things and trying to, well, make them more union friendly and incentivizing weed shops in those states to actually be union friendly. Of course, in Minnesota, we've been working on trying to legalize cannabis in this state for a number of years. So I hope once we get towards actually having a more formal debate where it looks like legalized cannabis could actually be a thing in this state, that we adopt the same type of language that's been put into place in California and New York, where basically they have incentivized weed shops to be pro-union. And I wonder, actually, once we get a little further along in the legalized cannabis debate, if that could be an issue of contention with some Republicans, where they might try to stick in some language that would not include making these shops labor-friendly in a way to try to get other Republicans on board. So we shall see when that pops up. But do keep in mind, California and New York do have provisions that are supposed to make their cannabis shops actually more union-friendly. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. That's not all the good news I have for you, because Betty McCollum and Dean Phillips are working on a new bill that would help people who have been stalked or are victims of sexual abuse. I'm going to tell you more about that on the other side of the break here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. We'll take your thoughts on any topics we've been talking about, but we'll get back to those good news stories coming up next here on the program.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
This is Gregory Rich, founder of Habitation Furnishing and Design, and host of Drink in the Style every Sunday at 5 p.m. You know, on the radio program, I often say that life is the big stuff, but living is in the details. The furniture in your home may be details, but that's where you do the living. So why not speak to one of Habitation's design professionals about making your space the best it can be? Habitation, 4317 Excelsior Boulevard in St. Louis Park.
Hi, this is Chad from AM 950. Snap Construction is arguably the most well-reviewed roofing, siding, window, and insulation contractor in the metro. Ryan is so excited about working with AM 950 and our listeners that he wants to help us grow.
This is Ryan, owner of Snap Construction. I was friends with Chad long before I started marketing with him. I was a bit skeptical of radio advertising before Chad convinced us to run ads. The advertising's been so successful, we want to help the station grow. We've absolutely loved working with the listeners of AM 950, and we all know how extremely important this radio station is to the community. To help AM 950 grow this summer, Snap Construction will be putting up proceeds to assist the station in marketing on social media. Snap Construction encourages you to follow, engage, share, and interact on the AM 950 social media platforms. Together, we can all work to ensure AM 950 continues to thrive and grow in our communities. We stand by our work with a lifetime craftsmanship guarantee. For a free estimate or more information on our financing, call 612-333-SNAP or check us out online.
Native Roots Radio is proud to announce we've added an extra hour.
Yeah, Chushka, 1 hour goes by too fast.
That's right, Uncle Curtis.
I'll have extra time to share important information about our sacred animals.
And report national and native news from all over the country and Canada.
This new hour is sponsored by Robbins Kaplan LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m.
We are awake.
Victor's 1959 Cafe in South Minneapolis is a locally owned and operated restaurant offering traditional Cuban food. Open for breakfast and lunch daily with dinner Tuesday through Saturday. For night shift workers, Victor's even has both a morning and evening happy hour, and Victor's now accepts dinner reservations too. Stop in and try some delicious, authentic Cuban cuisine like ropa vieja and seafood paella. Make your reservation and learn more at Victor's1959Cafe.com. Victor's 1959 Cafe, revolutionary Cuban cooking.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Again, continuing with some good news that we've seen come along the news wire over the past few days or so. And this one I'm very happy about. It's a bill being worked on by both Betty McCollum and Dean Phillips as they have announced that they are introducing a bipartisan bill called the Safe at Home Act, which helps protect people who have been victims of stalking or domestic assault. So the Safe at Home Act will build upon existing state-implemented address confidentiality programs, or ACPs, by requiring federal agencies to accept a substitute address in lieu of a physical address for an individual who fears for their safety. Steve Simon, of course, the Secretary of State in Minnesota, was also someone who was key in providing insight on this bill. So definitely happy to see that that thing is making its way along Congress, at least at a federal level, because there are some statewide programs that allow people to use anonymous addresses that are separate from their physical addresses if they are in danger of being stalked or domestic abuse. But shockingly, only 38 out of our 50 states actually have legislation and an ACP program that does protect people who have been victims of stalking or domestic assault. But hopefully this bill being proposed by McCollum and Dean Phillips will help build on that, at least at the federal level. One more story before we head back to the phone line. Some good news of all things out of the LA Times. Don't often hear good news coming from legacy media outlets, but the LA Times does have some good news as they recently reached a tentative labor agreement with a guild of workers that represents about 475 members. And what's key here is that the LA Times has usually been a very anti-union employer, but now they've actually had 475 members unionize and they've actually reached a labor deal. So one of the rare times you actually see some good news come out of the legacy media industry. Let's head back to the phone lines and talk to Mark in Fridley. Hey there, Mark, what's on your mind today?
Hey, guys, I just want to try to piggyback on Randy from St. Cloud. And, Randy, I really appreciate your calls. You're an astute guy. And also the station for letting us talk about these kind of things, because there's things the media doesn't want to talk about, the corporate media. And that was exemplified in CNN's coverage of the debate on Friday, where their panelists were not allowed to bring up climate change in 3 hours of questions. And that was Steyer who brought it up. So people don't know what they don't know. And, you know, the good news is that people seem to be starting to wake up. And one of the big takeaways from that debate was that instead of attacking Donald Trump, corporate neo-lib Dems attacked Elizabeth Warren. And that was their game plan. That was their strategy, to take her out, to take her down. And it was the people that were advocates for the status quo with private insurance companies regulating health care and using untrue and inaccurate statements to back up their position.
And Republican talking points, which really bugged me, saying how 149 million people are going to lose their insurance. It's a very misleading claim. But, yeah, continue, Mark.
It's not it's worse than misleading. I mean, it's corruption. It's fraudulent. They know what they're saying is a lie. And, you know, I know that I can look Bernie Sanders in the eye. I can look Elizabeth Warren in the eye. And the stuff that they promise, I can pretty much surmise that they're going to try to do what they actually say they're going to do. And, you know, we have to look at the promises that are made versus the promises that are kept. Don't tell me what you're going to do. I'll look at what you've done and tell you what you're going to do. And one of the ways that we can do this, and this should be a good news thing, is that the groundswell, and people are waking up to the way that we have been using our military as a mercenary force. Now, what the media doesn't want to tell you is that there's a massive lawsuit by the victims of 9/11 going on in Washington, D.C. right now that implicates the government of Saudi Arabia. Now, you know, everybody knew about Khashoggi for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and that just, you know, typically went away.
Pretty much disappeared, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But this is much larger than that, because this is the genesis of what the problem is that we're in now. And, you know, you're not going to get the media to try to cover that. Hang on.
Hey, Mark, we're actually towards the end of the show, so do call back actually tomorrow or on Monday. Hey, we're getting some dial tones in the background there. Hopefully no one's interfering with Mark's connection. But, yeah, just to finish up on what he was saying, going back
damn
and
talking. CIA.
It's the CIA, exactly, going after Mark. I think it's a giant conspiracy theory. You know what else actually wasn't asked about during the debate that kind of bugged me as well? Social Security. Not one question about Social Security. I like to focus on health care and Medicare, but the Trump administration has already made this a big priority if he's reelected to reform Social Security, i.e. privatize it. And the way they're going to do it is kind of similar to what Republicans have tried in the past, which is basically to tell seniors, oh, no, your Social Security, that's going to stay the same. But if you're under the age of 50, well, then we're going to privatize it and everything is going to change for you. And kind of disappointed we saw no talk about that at all, since there are even some Democrats who actually do like the idea of Social Security privatization. So, yeah, disappointed that that didn't come up during the debates, of course, as well as climate change. Not a single question about that as well. In fact, as Mark said, Tom Steyer, of all people, brought that up. By the way, Tom Steyer needs to get himself another tie. Having a fun conversation with Jennifer here at AM 950 during the debate, how I didn't believe her at first, but apparently in every media appearance, he wears the exact same tie, that red and green Christmassy-looking tie. You can actually Google pictures of him, and he has that same tie on in every single picture. So, yeah, someone's got to be dressing Tom Steyer better. You think he could afford that, being a billionaire. All right, that's all the time we have on today's program. I'll talk to you tomorrow.